From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan or on demand as a podcast. It's Halloween, October 31st, 2023. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gonna cheese, hawa, salama for joining the conversation. On today's show, the Juno Commission on Sustainability is holding a session on composting in Juno this Thursday, which will help answer the questions, why compost, and how does Juno compost today? We'll chat with the Jack about the Arts Roundup for November. But first up, a special interview with Culture Rich Conversations host Christina Michelle with NBA All-Star and our hometown hero, Carlos Boozer Jr., about his new book, Every Shot Counts. Those conversations, music, and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hansen grass, ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta ka na kaya ha ani kak, gunish cheesh.
Happy Halloween. You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Ock Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. NBA All-Star Carlos Boozer Jr. grew up right here in Juno, and now he's written his memoir about his journey. It's called Every Shot Counts, and Culture Rich Conversations host Christina Michelle chatted with Carlos recently about his inspirations, family, and why he has a whole chapter about Prince.
You're listening to Culture Rich. Culture Rich.
I'm Christina Michelle from Culture Rich Conversations, and I'm joined today by NBA All-Star, Olympic gold medalist, and now author Carlos Boozer Jr. Carlos, thank you so much for coming back to talk with us today.
Nah, thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it. Happy to be here. Tasha, I see you in the back. Big sis was good. Christina, good to see you. Everybody over looking good.
You always come with the best energy, Carlos. We're so glad to have you here as well. The last time we spoke, we spent some time talking about your life and where you are now. But today, the conversation is about your new book, Every Shot Counts, a memoir of resilience. So first of all, congratulations. Last time you were on, it wasn't out quite yet, but it is now.
Yeah, I'm super honored, man. Thank you very much. Super grateful. You know, I just think it's one of those things that I wanted to tell. It took a long time to get my words on paper. You know, a lot of those stories are healing and therapeutic for me. So I hope everybody enjoys the book, man. I just wanted to reach out to people to inspire them, and hopefully I inspired a few.
Of course. So can you tell us what your book is about and what led you to write it?
Yeah, I think right off the bat, you know, it's about having a dream, fighting for a dream, and then going out living your dream. And I got a ton of stories in there. Like, a lot of people probably think, oh, he probably had an easy road, or it was all, you know, rainbows every day. Nah, bruh, it wasn't like that. So I wanted to make sure I set the record straight and let everybody know, you know, anytime you want to do something that sounds outrageous and I'm reaching for the sky. I think about a 12-year-old kid growing up in Juneau, Alaska, that's telling his parents, his siblings, his big sis, his younger brothers, younger sisters, anybody that'll listen to him that, you know, when I get older, I'm going to go to the NBA, coming from Alaska. That sounds crazy, like I'm reaching for the stars, but, you know, I'm a dreamer, man. And I'm one of those guys that was going for it. And I didn't have smooth sailing all the time. You know, I had moments where I hit rock bottom. I had moments where, you know, I could have pivoted, but I didn't. I stayed true to who I was inside. I went for it, and it took a village, man. You guys know. It took a village for me to get to where I'm at. I had great family, great friends like you, Christina, great family like Natasha behind the scenes over there with the headphones on, and brothers, mom and dad, and great coach and Coach Houston, George Houston. Shout out to him in the Hall of Fame in Alaska. A ton of great teammates, man, along the way, teachers. Like, it took a village for me to get where I wanted to go, but I was blessed. God put the right people in my life.
So I understand that Coach K wrote the foreword to your memoir. Can you tell us who Coach K is to you and what it meant to you for him to write your foreword?
Yeah, man, I've been very fortunate to have Coach K in my life since I'm 17. You know, I graduated high school in 99 as a 17-year-old kid and got to campus down at Durham and at Duke. And, you know, Coach embraced me, challenged me, was one of those father figure types. You know, I have a great father, but being away from home, and when you decide the next chapter of your life, leaving high school, when you leave high school for that next chapter, it's a big decision, right? So, you know, when Coach K came to the apartment we had over there in Greener Park, sat down, met the whole family, you know, saw how strong of a family knit we had. And that resonated with him because he comes from a strong family. And I was like, Coach, you know, like I'm leaving Alaska. Like Durham is on the other side of the country. You know, I want to make sure I'm safe. I want to make sure that I'm in the right hands. And he answered every single question I had. I got to campus and I had great teammates like Jay Williams and Mike Dunleavy and Shane Battier. A bunch of guys that were, you know, had the same vision that I had, the same hunger, the same grind, the same goals. We were like-minded, you know, I had found my tribe, so to speak. So in that regard, we were brothers, man. We went through everything together. And, you know, Coach K is one of those guys that he'll tell you straight up, like, this is how you're going to become a better basketball player. But what makes Coach K so special is that his teachings and his lessons go well beyond the basketball court, you know, way outside the lines. And, you know, he's been one of my friends since I'm 17. I talked to him a couple of weeks ago, sent him a copy of the book, and he's really proud of me. Of course, he read through it in like 2 days. I'm like, Coach, you read that fast, dude? you know, he's a guy that will be there for you. He's a guy that's loyal. Some of the words I think about Coach K is, motivator, you know, one of the best motivators I've ever been around. He's also a nurturer in a lot of regards. Like when I had Carmani, at 25, 26 years old, he was one of the first people to call me to congratulate me and, you know, give me advice. One of the best advice that he ever gave me, and I'm going to give this to you guys and our audience, is how important family is, whether that's your husband or your spouse, or your wife, whether that's your children or, you know, if you guys are a little older, if you have grandchildren, whatever your family is, don't be as afraid to tell people, no, I have a meeting. And he told me this. I'm like, what does that mean? And he's like, so, you know, Loesch, now you're going to the NBA, you're, you know, NBA star. This is like, again, this is when I'm 25 or 26 when I had Carmani. You know, you're NBA star. People are going to be calling you for your time. And you got to be able to say, you know, I'm a dad now. You know, I'm a husband now. You know, I have a family. I'm sorry, I got a meeting. Yeah, your meeting could be going to take, you know, your son to get ice cream. It could be going to take your wife to the movies. That's it could be right. Whatever you want. But don't be afraid to tell people you got a meeting. So if you guys hit me in a couple days and I'm like, God, I got a meeting, I may be getting ice cream with Bloom. So just keep that in mind.
I love that, as it should be. So, Carlos, can you tell us what was the hardest thing about writing this book? Maybe a hardest story to tell or like something that came up for you that was difficult that you had to push through?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think when you're writing a book, a lot of it is you're reflecting on stuff that maybe you did, you know, face and some traumas that maybe you faced and you're healed from. And then sometimes you're facing some stuff that you kind of dusted under the rug and wanted to just leave in the back of your memory. And now you're reliving some of those moments. So I went through a couple of different moments like that. I think the one I'll tell you about, yeah, I got to read the book to see the rest now. But the one I'll tell you about is like going through divorce. You know, it's not an easy thing to deal with, you know, especially when you have children that you love and care about. Keeping in mind that my kids are going to read this book. You know, I got 4 kids. I got 3 sons in high school and 1 daughter who's 4 and a half. And, you know, I'm very close to their moms. Like Cece's one of my best friends and Nika's one of my best friends too. And I was very, I went over those chapters 10, 12 times because I want to make sure that I captured my voice and my emotions and I was able to articulate that in the proper way. But I also wanted to be truthful and honest and capture, you know, Cece's voice in her chapters and capture Nika's voice in her chapters and be mindful that my kids, like, I hope I did them proud as I'm talking about how we navigated through, you know, something like divorce. I mean, it's all, it, when you're so close, it almost feels like a death in the family when you're going through that moment. So, no, that was one of the toughest things for me was reliving those moments and trying to make sure I capture everybody's voice in the right aspect.
I love that. Can you talk to us about maybe a roadblock? And I know we have to read the book to get all of the juicy information, but maybe just give us one of those roadblocks in your career that you had to overcome that you talked about in the book.
Yeah, I'll give you a real one. Like I went to Duke, you know, I went to Duke University, had a pretty good career in 3 years. We won a championship my sophomore season. I was named Big Man of the Year, All-American. My junior year, and then it's draft night, and I'm all excited. I got the suit all fresh. I got the fresh cut. You know what I mean? I'm good. And I'm waiting to hear my name get called. And I felt like, you know, I'm, you know, what, 20 years old, 19, 20 years old, thought I had a great career in college, and I had the wrong perspective initially. I felt like I was a little bit entitled. Like I felt like I deserved a first round spot that I put enough work in college to be a first round draft pick. Well, guess what happened? First round went by. I didn't hear my name get called. And it was heartbreaking. It was like one of those moments where I was like, man, I thought I deserved that. I thought I worked my butt off. I thought I'd be appreciated in that way. And I had the wrong mindset. You know, five picks later, the fifth pick in the second round, I heard my name get called. And in that moment, I had a rush of emotions. One, like, obviously disappointment. I didn't go in the first round. But that quickly subsided. And I was so grateful, so excited that John Lucas would be my new head coach with the Cleveland Cavaliers, was giving me an opportunity to play in the NBA and live out my dream. And when I look back on it, and that night I reflected heavily, and there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people who put their name in the NBA draft every year and never hear their name get called, right? Only 60 names get called. And so in that moment, that night on draft night, I felt immediate gratitude. Like, man, listen, I don't care if you was the first pick in the draft or the last pick in the draft, but your name got called, bro. And that was a moment where I had this huge chip on my shoulder. You know, probably the size of Mount Juno. Like, I couldn't wait to go out there and just prove to everybody that I belong. You know, that was one. I mean, that's a moment where I'm actually reaching my goal. Let me take it back, right? Let me take it back to, like, I'm 12 years old. You know, when you go into seventh grade and the teacher says, hey, everybody write on a piece of paper what you want to do when you grow up. And I'm that kid again, 12 years old, telling everybody I'm going to the NBA. And she told me, nah, you know, you should lower your expectations. You probably work at the local gas station or over there at Fred Meyer's, our local grocery store. And I'm coming from a house where my parents encouraged me to dream. You know, they're like, you know, go after your goals. And I told Tasha, go after your goals. Like, so I'm coming from a household of dreamers where that's encouraged. And so I told my seventh grade teacher, I'm not working at no gas station. I got bigger plans than that. And that was just, that's just a moment of, where, you know, you never know the influence of your teachers. Can it really influence a kid, especially at 12? But I was so headstrong and probably just stubborn. That's probably the word to use. That I just wanted to go after my goal. So I'm gonna tell my one of my biggest messages in this book is to fight for your dream, right? Mm-hmm. Fight for your goal. Run into roadblocks. It's not an easy stream. Not every road is paved, bro. Some of them are gravel. Some of them are cobblestone. Some of them just dirt and trees. And you got to go over that too. And my story is just keep going. You know, you're going to come to people who are going to try to discourage you. Ah, we block them out and we use them as motivation. Put that rock on your shoulder. You know, have a chip on your shoulder and go out there and want to prove them wrong. Like, I even have a rubber band on right now. I don't know if y'all can read this. It may be backwards for y'all.
It says never quit.
Like, just my message is keep going. And the message isn't just for the dreamer. Like I told y'all earlier in the interview, I had a tribe of people. I didn't do it so long. A lot of people helped me get there. This message is also for, you know, the people, the spouses and the support team and the grandparents and the parents and the friends. Like, if you have someone in your circle that's going for something, be a part of the journey, be able to encourage them, help them, you know, give them information, give them an education, look up stuff for them to help them achieve their goal. Like, I was fortunate to have that along my path, and I can't tell you how invaluable that was.
Well, if you're just joining us, I'm Christina Michelle, and I'm here with Carlos Boozer Jr., NBA All-Star, Olympic gold medalist, and now author. And we are discussing just a little bit about his new book, Every Shot Counts, A Memoir of Resilience. So, Carlos, you have sons, and they also are in the sports arena. Is that correct?
Absolutely. My older son, Carmani, is a stud baseball player. In his senior year, he's a pitcher, getting recruited by some colleges. So we'll see how that goes and where he decides to go next level. And then my twins, Cameron and Caden, are basketball players, and they're playing their butts off on that basketball court too, making a really good name for themselves. And we'll see what steps they decide to take next. And then my daughter is a world-renowned Lego builder, okay? Bloom builds, she builds like castles in her room. So all four athletes.
I love it. And what are you teaching your four athletes in regards to how to handle a professional life in sports?
Yeah, I mean, well, they're getting there. You know, they're in the process. They're hardworking kids, man. They got the grind. They got the, you know, I think one of the mistakes that this generation makes is they think, oh, you know, Kobe Bryant just woke up and became Kobe Bryant, or LeBron just woke up and became LeBron, and God just touched Michael Jordan's toe and he became Michael Jordan. Like, oh, don't get me wrong. Like, God definitely blessed them with some incredible athletic abilities and all that. That part is very true. But these guys put the work in. And the one thing I love about my sons is they're not afraid of the work. They grind. They'll be in the gym every day. They'll be in the weight room every day. They're always trying to improve. And that's something I love about my kids. They love to get better. They love the challenge. And I'm very proud of them for taking the challenge on.
I love that. So, Carlos, you dedicated a chapter to your experience with the legendary Prince. Can you share with us a little about that? Like, why was that important to you? Why did he get a whole chapter?
Yeah, it's Prince, first of all. You know what I'm saying? Like, I never thought in a million years that I would cross paths with such an icon, legendary musician, singer, actor. I mean, what did he do? Like, style. He was always ahead of the game with his fashion. I wouldn't wear everything he wore. But he definitely was cutting edge and was unafraid of those moments. I think for me, I had this, you know, I knew where I came from. We came from a three-bedroom apartment in Juneau, Alaska. There were seven of us living in there. Bunk beds. I got Charles breathing down my neck. You know what I'm saying? Like, so when I finally made it, I wanted to get some statement crib. And there was this monster house in LA. It was like 18,000 square feet in Bel Air. And that was like my made it purchase, or whatever, if you want to call it. And so I bought this big monster house that had room for everybody. Christina, you and the family could have came over. Like, we had all the space. And so I bought this crib, but and it was in LA because I spent my summers at the time. It's like when I'm like 24 in LA, but I played for the Utah Jazz. So I was going to spend seven, eight months in Utah. And so I get back to Utah after I bought this house. CC had decked the whole thing out. Beautiful. All earth tones. That was the vibe at the time. Cream, you know, carpets and all that good stuff. Wallpaper. You know, that's not really my jet era, but she did a job. So get back to Utah, and shout out to Roxanne, with my realtor, Roxanne Nelson. She's hitting me up, blowing me up, saying somebody wants to rent your crib. And I'm like, nah, I barely spend any time in my house. I ain't nobody going to live in my house except for me. And she was like, so then she called like two or three more times. And I'm like, Rox, I love you. And your persistence is awesome. But the answer is still no. And she was like, but he's willing to give you $95K a month. And so I was like, $1,000 a month. So I was like, you know what? You know, I said, since the house gonna be empty anyway, you might take a couple of dollars on the house. So eventually I said yes, obviously. And so I fly out to LA to sign the contract. I don't even know who it is. It's in a company name. So I fly out to LA. A limo pulls up the driveway and Prince gets out. And I looked at her. I said, is that Prince? You know what I'm saying? Like, is that? That's Prince, right? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, whoa, right? So it's Prince walks out and he's, it's Prince, man.
Oh my gosh.
You know what I mean? Walks out with a smooth walk. You know what I mean? Look like just, like he just, I don't know, came out of like coming to America, like Zamunda, like, you know what I'm saying? Look like a king, right? Coming out, got jewelry draped on him, like look fly, like he about to go do a concert for the, I don't mean for the Grammys or something. So he pull up, talk a little bit. We talked a lot about basketball. He's a, he loved basketball. I grew up in Minnesota. He's a huge Minnesota Timberwolves fan. Love Kevin Garnett. And I'm like, yeah, I love him too. When I ain't playing against him, he's great. Because he was, Kevin Garnett was a problem. So we're talking about KG. Walk around the house. He loves that. So he had been there multiple times. Because the guy that I bought the house from was a partial owner of Interscope Records. Interscope Records.
Oh.
So they, Interscope Records guy went through a divorce. And that's how I was able to pull up on, you know, get up on the house. He had been there many nights. So he knew the house very well.
Makes sense. And he, okay.
I was like, I want to rent the house out. You know, I'll be here for like a year doing my new album, 3121. This house gave me so much inspiration, whatever, whatever. And I was like, yeah, man, this house got a lot of inspiration. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't know. But I'm like, yeah, I'm like 24. I'm like, yeah, I'm a prince right now. Talking about inspiration. Anyway, so he gets the crib and he's been there for like 5 months. I got hurt during the season. So I fly back to LA and I'm hitting Prince up. Like, P, I got to come by the house. Let me know if you need anything. I'm going to pull up, you know, in a couple weeks. Didn't hear back. A couple weeks showed up. I pull up to the gate and I had these two gold lions on the gate. And when I got to the house, there wasn't no more gold lions on the gate.
Oh no.
It was like the symbol. And I didn't know what the hell the symbol was. I hadn't talked to Tasha yet. She ain't schooled me on what the symbol was. So I didn't know what the symbol was. I'm over like, the hell going on around here, right? So I go back. I think I went to the wrong address. Remember, I've only been there a couple of times. I only had the house for a little bit of time. So I go back down, you know, at the time we had this thing called MapQuest. So I'm MapQuesting my house, making sure I'm going to the right spot. Go back up, it's the right. So I put my code in and it opened up. So I was like, okay, cool. This is my house, I think. So then I drive up the driveway and I told y'all about how CeCe had decorated the entire house, right? You know, earth tone.
Earth tones,
you know what I'm saying? Earth
right.
tone, like brown, green, you know, earth tone. But it's like the earth. I walked in, everything was black and purple. Everything. He ripped out the carpet.
No.
I mean, he had like a hair salon in one of the bedrooms. My man made my weight room into like a nightclub, had a DJ booth, the little disco ball. Remember the 70s disco ball vibe? He had that vibe up there. You know, and then I'm looking around. I'm steaming because this was not a part of the contract.
I was going to say, what about the contract that you went out there to sign?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, because we had to sign papers, right? And that was not an addendum on that thing, right? So I'm looking around and I'm getting hot. So I hit him up and I'm like, you know, Prince, I'm at the crib. It don't look like the crib. You know, hit me back. And so I called him probably five good times. Solid. Five, maybe six. Might have been 10, but it was a good five times. Never heard back, right? So I'm like, man, I got to sue this guy just to get his attention. So my lawyer's like, do you want to sue? I'm like, nobody really wants to sue Prince, bro. Right. I was probably confused Prince. Like, give me a break. Like, come on. But this is business. So, you know, my lawyers drew up some paper, sent it over to his representatives, and I get a call like the next day. And he was in Japan promoting his album, again, the 3121 album. So he hits me and is like, Booze, don't worry. It'll be like I was never there when I move out. And you know, Prince got a smooth voice. I'm not, listen, if you ain't ever heard Prince talk, some of y'all viewers, some of the audience listening, kind of young, y'all really don't know who Prince is. But if you go back and watch some movies, you know, Purple Rain, listen to some of his sound, Prince got a very convincing voice, okay? So I was like, yeah, it's going to be all right when you move out. Yeah, you know what I mean? So anyway. He moves out and I go back to the house and it was like he was never there, man. Like he let me tell you what he did. He literally moved everything that CeCe had decorated the house with out and put it in storage down to the forks. Okay. And then he redecorated the entire house the way he wanted to decorate it. Then when his lease was up, which was a year, he moved all of his stuff out and removed all my stuff back in while paying $95,000 a month to be in the house. That's how much money Prince had. And remember, I'm telling y'all, it was an 18 6,000 square foot house. You know how much furniture, you know how much carpet that is? Like, this is back when carpet was in. Carpet ain't really in no more, but it was in back then. That's a lot of carpet. So anyway, he was, he just wanted the house to look like his, man, straight up. And he had the money to do it, so he did what he wanted to do. And he took care of my, it was the most spotless house I had ever seen when he moved, when I went to go check on it, when he moved out. It was like spotless. It's almost like he never lived there because it was all his stuff in there.
Wow. He was a magician. I love that. Yeah,
straight up.
Well, now I am even more excited to read the book, Carlos. I mean, you just have so much to share, and I'm so thankful to you for being here with us today and giving us the information that you have. I'm sure that our listeners can't wait to go out and get your book as well. Can you tell me what you want your readers to take away at the end of your book?
Yeah, I mean, listen, every shot count is about resilience, man, like being strong enough to withstand the storm. Did you ever think about when you're going through something that you're the storm? You know, that people got to watch out because you're coming and you got things you want to achieve, and either they can run from you or run with you. And this book is one of those stories where I'm telling y'all about some of the ups, some of the downs, some of the peaks, some of the valleys. I didn't let the downs stop me, you know, and I'm encouraging you guys. Don't let the down stop you. Let them motivate you. Let them encourage you. You know, find your tribe. Find people that are motivated, that have goals, that are hardworking, that are honorable, that are loyal, and ride with them. Let them ride with you. You guys go achieve some greatness out there. I want to see you successful. I have people in my corner that like Natasha that wanted to see me successful. And you got to find the people that want to help you, not the people that want to hurt you. Or there's a lot of fake friends out there. Find your real friends. And I encourage the people who are with those people, like whether it's the friends or the parents, again, or the spouses, or, you know, imagine having a hater in your own room, like in your own house, like doesn't believe in you. Like, that's tough to overcome. But guess what? You can overcome it. You know what I mean? Like, what DJ Khaled say? They don't want you to win, but we're going to win anyway. Right? So my thing is, go out there, find the people who really want to see you succeed, follow that tribe. And anytime you run into a road bump or a speed bump or something that's designed to stop you, figure out a way to go through that wall and keep going. Don't quit.
Well, Carlos, thank you again for your time here with us today. Your book, Every Shot Counts, A Memoir of Resilience, is available right now. And can you tell us where we can find it?
Everywhere, anywhere you get books at, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, wherever you buy your books at, you can buy Every Shot Counts. There's a message in there for you. Give it to your kids. Holidays are coming. Not a bad gift.
Absolutely. Well, it's always a pleasure, and we do hope that you'll come back and see us again sometime soon, and wish anytime. You the very, very best to you and to your family. And I'm Christina Michelle with Culture Rich Conversations. We air every Thursday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO. You can grab Carlos's new book wherever books are sold.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Glen A.D. have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot, once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages, and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life. For today, and for future generations. Little Itsy Bitsy Spider, the Halloween version. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. This Thursday at 7 p.m., the Juno Commission on Sustainability is offering a free community knowledge sharing session and question and answer period at the Mendenhall Valley Library or via Zoom. Here to tell us about it is one of the commissioners, Marion Colgunath-Cheesh, for being here today. Marion, hi.
Hi, Boston. Happy Halloween.
It's happy Halloween. Good to see you again. Everybody's downtown giving out candy to the children's right now. So yeah. That's kind of a fun adventure. And Halloween is good and playing some good music here on today's show, listening to some good Halloween tunes. But we can't forget. I thought Itsy Bitsy Spider was appropriate because, you know, they're in our gardens, they're in our composting, they're in our trash.
That's right. They help us out. They're very helpful.
They do help us out. I don't
we
know
love
how
our
many,
local spiders.
I don't know how many I've saved by putting them in a cup and taking them outside. So you're here on behalf of the Juno Commission on Sustainability. Let's remind everyone, what is the Juno Commission on Sustainability?
Well, the city has a lot of citizen commissions, right? So you have your assembly members and your city employees. And there are also sometimes citizen commissions like working groups. And that'll be a bunch of people who get apply and are appointed. And we have public meetings and we sit and we talk about stuff. And in the case of the Juno Commission on Sustainability, our job is to essentially be vehicles to communicate to the assembly priorities on sustainability. So we'll be doing things like reading through reports or discussing community issues and then bringing recommendations to the assembly or sometimes sending someone to the appropriate assembly meeting to talk to them to make sure, hey, are you guys thinking about how this is going to affect the city's energy use? Or are you guys, you know, still working on that zero waste plan? Are you guys still, you know, like keeping in mind sustainability as you know, regulations and statute get implemented? And like there's a lot of citizen commissions on a lot of issues like human rights and other things, but we are focused on essentially preparing Juno for the sustainable future that we're lucky to live in a community that a lot of people want, right?
Right, right.
We're lucky to have an assembly that cares about sustainability and we're lucky to have a public that cares about sustainability. So our job is essentially just to hold those conversations and to both try to inform the public about what we learn and to try to inform the assembly too about what the public wants. So
break it down for me a little bit in terms of sustainability, because I know it means, it could mean a lot of things you've mentioned.
Oh, it does mean a lot.
You've mentioned energy. And then there's also, you know, environmental, and which I guess energy is part of environmental. But what are the, so there's just, it's a wide ranging list of topics.
It is.
Right?
It's a wide ranging list of topics. And it's kind of important to have a group with a large purview like that, because of course, some of the topics will impact like Department of Public Works. Others might have to do with education. Others might have to do with housing, right? Like there are a lot of different sectors of work that the city does that have to do with sustainability as a larger concept. Mm. And each of those departments is busy doing their own work, and every assembly member is busy with the work in front of them, right? So having the citizens group on the outside to kind of like both try to discuss the issues that they might not have time to get into and to see how those issues cross different parts of city work, right? Sometimes we're talking about energy. Sometimes we're talking about transportation, like the city buses that are trying to get electrified. Sometimes we're talking about fuel and greenhouse gas emissions. And sometimes in this case, on Thursday, what I came here to talk to you about, in this case, on Thursday, we're talking about compost, right? Which is something that I think the community has really been wanting a discussion about, and we were happy to get a chance to host it. So we're hosting a conversation about composting in the city, private and public and institutional and individual, all of those aspects of composting and where we're going, where Juno as a community is going on compost. That's going to be on Thursday at the Menonal Valley Library, 7 to 8 p.m. It's also going to be on Zoom if you can't make it down to the library. And if you can't make it tomorrow or Thursday night at 7 to 8 p.m., it's also going to be recorded. So you should be able to watch it after the fact if you want to get all caught up on what the deal is with composting.
Oh, nice. So it'll be up on like YouTube or something.
Yeah, it'll be up on, I think the city has a channel.
The city website. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. City website. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Yeah. So it's like, it's so interesting composting, right? Because we've sort of gotten to the point where we're all aware that we should probably be doing it.
And right.
We're also aware that, you know, that there are ways to do certain things that we make that are compostable. I know Lisa Doherty, who's going to be there on Thursday, who's the owner of Juno Composts. I remember when we were doing Seafood Festival, she was talking about how, you know, the cups and the disposable cups and the foodware, the forks and knives, that can all be made of things that can be composted, you know,
yes,
compostable.
Absolutely.
And I know I've also noticed that a lot of the restaurants have gone to more of a compostable takeaway, like in terms of the containers they give
you. That's right. Trying to get away from styrofoam or to reusables. We get, when we go get our Thai food, we get those containers, the clamshells there.
I have so many of those containers.
Reuse them. Yeah, but I reuse them for everything.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, they're fantastic. You can bring lunch in them. I give away Christmas cookies in them. They're the best. But the Juno Compost is the entity that has been making compost happen for a lot of Juno, right? That's the private company that is making things
happen.
Lisa
should get awards.
She should get all of the awards.
Yeah,
she's been putting blood, sweat, and tears into that for years.
Yeah.
It is one of those key community members that like, oh my God, what will we do without Lisa?
Yeah.
And at the same time, if we want to get all of Juno composting, there's going to be some kind of public role played, right? So what does that look like? And at the same time, if we want to get all of Juno composting, there's an institutional role to be played, right? So Sir Scott, an environmental specialist at Tlingit and Haida, is going to be there to talk about how Tlingit and Haida as an organization is starting to compost and take responsibility for institutional waste and making that a priority as an organization. And that's really exciting to me because you can imagine then thinking, oh, there's a lot of large organizations or institutions, nonprofits, tribal organizations, private organizations, kind of public-private partnerships that could take, they're big enough, they could take responsibility for some of their own composting and maybe, you know, fast track the process. And anything that people can do to push this forward is important because I think a lot of Junoites also know our landfill is a key concern, right? The longer we can
Triggered about half the audience.
I know. That's my job, right? That's what I'm here to do. We have to talk about this.
Yeah.
It's not fun, but we have to talk about it. We have to have a community conversation. And the more we can divert organic waste, all our food scraps, all packaging that can be composted, the more we can divert that, even construction, you know, wood and suitable construction pieces, gardening. I have to go dump some down at the compost center. I've got a bunch of pot plants in my house that it's time to get rid of the soil, right? The more of that we can divert from the landfill, the better for the community, whether you do it in your backyard, whether an institution does it, whether Juno Compost does it, whether there's a public option in the future, whatever that is. And working that out is going to be sticky, right? And that's what we want to talk about. We want to get down there and talk about the city got a grant to work on some facilities, and facilities are needed. At the same time, we have this private group, this private company, Juno Compost, that has been serving the community faithfully and is just kicking butt out there. We need to support that. We have larger institutions making decisions about making positive choices about dealing with the organic waste. We have private businesses, like there are a lot of downtown businesses that have chosen compostable packaging or are choosing to compost their, for example, restaurant waste. That how can we make that happen more? How can we make it easier for backyard composting to happen among neighbors or neighbor groups, right?
Yeah.
So that's what we're here to talk about Thursday night. The city's going to be there represented by Diana Robinson, who is really fantastic and is able to talk about what's going on with the city's plans, both like what's moving, what's not moving, what could move, right? Depending on what the community pushes for. And Lisa Doherty will be there representing Juno Compost, and Sir Scott will be there to talk about what Clinkett and Haida is doing, along with, I think, some other members of the team will be there too. And we know that there will be backyard composters, master gardeners, experts in the audience as well. So it is kind of an open Q&A. I'm sure there's going to be some great knowledge sharing while they're there. But yeah, this conversation has needed to happen for a long time. We've been excited to create a space where it can happen. And I think the word is getting out now that it's happening. We've been kind of trying to promote it for a while, but it's hard to get people interested. And then suddenly people hear about it and go, oh, no, that, yes, yes.
It seems like it's something that you hear that you know you should be doing, but maybe if you're not doing it, you don't know quite how to get started. And is this talk going to be helpful for that? Because I think there's, I mean, some of the questions on the poster is one of them is why compost, you know, which is, I guess, the first step is like, why do we do it? What is that doing to help us?
I think we're lucky in our community that a lot of people are getting beyond that question now, understand that it's really important, especially we're isolated, right? We as a community need to take responsibility for the waste generated in our community, especially because we're trucking, we're flying everything in, right? Yeah. We're boating and flying everything in. We're not trucking anything in, I guess. taking responsibility for our own waste is key. And the city is working on a zero waste plan, right? And that's what Juno ultimately needs to work towards. We know that. And and getting our organic waste to the point where we are using it here to not lose those nutrients, to enrich the soil, to prevent the greenhouse gas emissions, and to prevent having to like overflowing our landfill or like having to ship garbage out, right? Like all of those are reasons to compost. But we also need to make it easy and accessible for people to do, right? Juno Compost does an amazing job of that. And I think that if you are an individual who's not composting yet, you will probably learn about how easy it is to hook up with Juno Compost, which is possible right now. There are also other organizations that are like Clinkett and Haida starting it up. I think Sunny Valley is already doing it. There are like private businesses that are composting for themselves, and there are tons of backyard composters, gardeners, the community gardens, right? All of those things are going to play a role. So
yeah. What's the hopeful goal to come out of Thursday night?
I think there's a lot of kind of interpersonal discussion about like what's going on with the city, what's going on with Juno Compost. And like, I think that having a space to like talk about that in a formal environment and kind of like get all the information out, get everyone on the same page as far as the information about where we're going. And I think that being forward focused is helpful, honestly. Like, okay, what do we do now? What do we do next? How do we make this happen more? How do we make it easier and more accessible? How do we integrate all of these solutions?
Yeah, I was inspired years ago before social media. I remember reading an article in a newspaper on paper, which was about a person. She lived in New York, and she had because you said zero waste, and you made me think of this, like in terms of getting down to nothing. She had a glass jar, like a mason jar.
Yeah.
And all of her waste for a year was in that jar.
Whew.
How she did that, I don't remember, but I was inspired because I was like, because obviously you just go through your day a lot of the times, just, you know, chucking this, chucking that, buying this, buying that. And you don't necessarily even think about it, but it's sort of like trying to put it to the forefront of what can I reduce, reuse, recycle kind of thing. And what can I compost to put back into the environment? What are those things that, what could I be choosing differently in my products that I use and how I go about my day to be able to do that? And so you can maybe find out this information if you have some interest in this. Mm-hmm. And if you also have some knowledge, it sounds like you want people there who have knowledge and also those who are interested to come Thursday night to the library.
Yes, there's definitely kind of a large like group community information share that needs to happen to get everyone on the same page. And I am looking forward to that. It's on Thursday night at the Menonal Valley Library, 7 to 8 p.m. And we're going to have Lisa Doherty from Juno Compost. We're going to have Diana Robinson from Public Works, City and Borough Juno. And we're going to have Sir Scott from Click It and Haida. It's going to be facilitated by Nick Waldo, who's a different commissioner of the Juno Commission on Sustainability. He's the leader of our solid waste subcommittee.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he'll be the facilitator. He's very knowledgeable about solid waste. It's
and if you can't
his day job too.
Make it to the library on Thursday, you can RSVP to join the Zoom at facebook.com/sustainablejuno.
That's right. The Zoom link is on the city's website, and it's also on our Facebook event, just so that you can find it when it's time to attend the meeting if you'd like to. And again, it will be recorded and put up on the city's website or channel after the fact, so that people can catch it afterwards if they want to know what went down.
Yeah, and you can go to juno.org and search for the Juno Commission on Sustainability. There's a nice website there. Or they have their own email. You can email them at jcos@juno.org. Marian, thanks for coming and telling us about this. It's
Thank
composting
you so
much. In Juno, Thursday night, 7 to 8 p.m. at the Menonhall Library. Sounds good.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to it.
Awesome work. Thanks for coming in, Gunnath Cheesh. Up next, we'll chat with Phil from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council and get the Arts Roundup and First Friday previews. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Classic Michael Jackson Thriller. Wow. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, getting in a nice spooky mood. Time once again to welcome to Studio 2K, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson, Mr. Phil Hipshin, Executive Director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, here to give us all the goodness on arts this month, as well as First Friday events. Welcome, Phil. Gunnath Cheesh for being here.
Thank you for having me. Happy Halloween.
Happy
and
Halloween.
Boom. Let me say that was the best Michael Jackson impression I've ever heard. So
I don't know. I was just trying to sing along. I wasn't even trying to do an impression. Wait, if you want to see an impression. No, I'm just kidding. All right. So, yeah, tonight's Halloween, and that means that tomorrow we enter the wonderful world of November, which means we have yet another First Friday before, of course, the big First Friday gallery walk coming in December as well.
Yep.
We have some things to get through. November, we got public market, we got a bunch of stuff.
But, so much in November.
Let's talk a little bit. What do you got on your list today? Tell us the folks what's happening.
My gosh, you guys, get ready for this. This Friday at the Arts and Humanities Council, we have the UAS Northwest Coast Student Art Exhibit,
which
I'm really, really excited about. Of course, featuring works by students and instructors in the Northwest Coast Arts courses over at UAS. That opens at 4 to 7, or opens at 4, runs to 7 on Friday, and it's open through the entire month. So it's a really cool opportunity to see what they're up to, especially if you live downtown. I know it's kind of hard to get all the way out to the other side of Juno.
I know. I talk to my big city friends, and they're like, how far is it? And they're like, that's nothing. But for us, it's all relative, right?
It's like, all relative.
The road is a long way.
It's a really great chance to see what they're doing over at UAS.
That's great, though. And that'll be in the gallery at the Jack, right?
Yes, in the gallery. At the State Museum, David Rosenthal is there with his new exhibit, Painting at the End of the Ice Age. That's exploring the science of climate change across the globe over, I think, 40 years worth of his paintings. So really,
wow.
Really, really cool.
Yeah, and he'll be on the show this Friday to talk about that.
Oh, you'll learn
bit.
All
yeah,
about
it's gonna
it
it's going to be
then.
So cool.
Amazing. He's having a lecture on First Friday at 6:30, so it's a great chance to learn more about his work in that exhibit. And then on November 4th, he'll probably tell you more about this too. But he is holding a youth workshop at the State Museum as well on watercolor painting. So
that's great.
A really cool fall winter activity for the kids.
Absolutely.
And that exhibit's open through the end of the month. At the City Museum, we've talked about this before. You know, I love merch. There's especially like Juno specific merch is yes. just amazing. The City Museum is having a exclusive sticker launch. They recently commissioned three local artists to produce theme stickers, and they're finally on sale this first Friday, between 4 and 6 p.m. The sticker designs are commemorating really iconic Juno figures, Patsy Ann, Romeo the Wolf. If you know Romeo, everyone knows Romeo.
Romeo the Wolf, yeah. Yes.
Rest in power. Rest in power, Romeo. And then also the harnessing of the Atom totem pole. So all stickers centered around those designs by Junie Choop, Claire Scott, and Chloe Kavanaugh, who won the Kathy Kolker Strutty Award for Innovation in the Arts this year.
Right.
So it's really cool. That's a first Friday event only. So definitely check that out. At the Triangle Club.
Who doesn't love their stickers?
Everyone though? Loves stickers.
We all love yeah. the stickers. Yeah.
Put them everywhere. Put them on your car. I love. Yeah. If you see a car with stickers on it, it's my car. At the Triangle Club. I'm really excited about this one, too. And I have a little bit of a story. For okay. this one to preface it. So I moved back here from L.A. You know this. And one of my favorite bars in L.A. is called Akbar. And they had a weekly craft night where you could just come in and make stupid little art things. It was fun. And it was just a really great casual way to unwind, meet new people, and create some funny little art pieces together. So I'm excited that that's happening in Juneau at the Triangle Club. It's their annual napkin art contest kickoff, which I absolutely love. So go in, draw some doodles on a napkin, and then voting happens on all of those. You put them up on the wall and they vote during gallery walk.
Oh, wow.
So go there and create your masterpiece.
So wait, you can go there throughout the month of November and create this napkin art. And then mm-hmm. in December, they're going to do the judging.
Yes. Okay. Yes. I don't know if there's a prize or not. I'll probably have
pride.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But then also in that same vein, today is also the last day, I believe, to submit your glass design contest submission at Devil's Club. That annual contest they do, and I think there's a $100 gift prize for
nice.
That. So grab a drink there this Halloween, do a little drawing and submit that. And while you're there, check out the new exhibit by Aisha Wise, which I've heard described as naturescapes with a psychedelic twist, which sounds pretty cool to me.
That's awesome.
Whew. Okay. Winded. Time for a little break. We have other things going on throughout the month. We have two Juno piano series at the Jack this month. The first one is Saturday, November 4th at 7 p.m. with John Hayes. And the second one is November 12th at 3 p.m. with Mei Shui, I believe is how you pronounce her last name. And she's performing a program of Rachmaninoff. And these recitals are always just such an amazing way to showcase musical talent in Juno and from abroad, everywhere you can imagine. So definitely check that out. You can buy your tickets at jahc.org. There are a couple other things. We have an art glass on November 16th, wreath making, which I understand is always a very popular one. And there are somehow still tickets available. So go online to our website and sign up for that if you want to make some nice holiday gifts for your family and friends. Everyone loves a wreath. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. And I also wanted to bring up that you had the Juno Arts and Humanities Council had sent this out. SMU Data Arts has done some study. They do it. They call it their annual Arts Vibrancy Index. Mm-hmm. And Juno made the list.
We made the list, which is so exciting.
So they did three different lists. Mm-hmm. They do large communities over 1 million. Of course, number one was San Francisco. Medium, which is Pittsfield, Maine. Mm-hmm. And then Juno is in the small communities. It's a population under 100,000. The first place was Jackson, Wyoming. Mm-hmm. But Juno is in the top 10.
It's in the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's eight. Great. It sort of speaks to our wonderful community.
Yeah, I think it's a huge testament to just the diversity and vibrancy of all the different communities we have in Juneau. Indigenous art production is so important to our community. And they, I think all of the art production happening lately just plays a huge role in that. So yes, it's really, really amazing. I'm really proud. I think everyone else who lives in Juneau should be really proud. Yeah.
Keep it up, Juneau.
Keep it up, Juneau. Yeah. I think I've said this before on air too, but my previous position was at UCLA, which is the same size as Juneau population wise. And there is so much more going on in Juneau in terms of art and just arts programs, arts organizations, theater organizations, musical, everything's there's just an insane amount of stuff going on here. And it's mind boggling.
Well, and again, it's great to have you back in Juneau. And you're going to be celebrating coming up on a year here pretty soon, right?
I think it'll be a year in March.
Oh, March. Okay.
So I got a few months.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It feels like you've been here a while.
Don't count your chickens before they hatch. I don't know if that metaphor makes sense in this context.
Well, it's Halloween. Anything can happen. So good of Tish for being here, Phil. We'll talk to you next month.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy Halloween.
Yeah, happy Halloween. That will do it for today's Juneau Afternoon. Have a sweet and spooky Halloween. On tomorrow's show, we'll have a preview of the Byron Schenkman recital, plus some First Friday events and all the details on the Juneau Ski Club, Juneau Ski Patrol big annual fundraiser. Juneau Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juneau 104.3 and KAUK Juneau Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JuneauAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juneau Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Lisa Purvis. Thanks, and have a glorious and happy and joyful and really filled tummy with sweets Halloween. Thank you.